I hate the holidays, said me as they're approaching, even though you're listening to this afterwards. I it's so bad. I want to have a good time during this time of the year, and I want to enjoy it, but we have destroyed it socially and culturally in the United States. We have absolutely perverted it, and I hate it. Why
do you hate it?
Well, let me tell you, inner self, why I hate it. Once Thanksgiving kicks in, all right, in our job, you don't, like, the holidays don't matter.
You said last time that you were in control.
Yes, I am in control, and I'm changing that, but I'm working through it now, and I'm not perfect. But right, and I know it's not just me, because I see it all over Twitter and Facebook. All of us working in comics are just, the holidays just means you have more to work around. So that's stressful. Your schedules get all fucked up. I mean, I see people who work outside of this, they get time off and all that stuff. And now, yeah.
Hey, dumbass, you can take time off.
Yes, and I realize that now. I can take my time off. It's my schedule. But I haven't. But next year, I'm setting things up so I will. But so I work crazy hours. And so anything holiday related just becomes an obstacle. So I already am in a bad mood at a party or whatever because I'm falling behind. So that's unhealthy thought on holidays, number one. Number two, so with all that in mind, my schedules get fucked. And I don't mean just work, but my workout schedules get fucked. Holiday concerts for the kids, not going to work out tonight. Extra meetings at my wife's work, so I got to work. I got to come home, miss the gym tonight because it's end of the year stuff. And it's not... And I what an asshole I am. Getting annoyed because my kids have concerts. And I'm not annoyed at them. I go and it's incredible to see them and it's a good time. But I do sit there like kind of counting the minutes until it goes. And that's fucked up of me. I'm aware of that. But this is why I hate the holidays. And it's because of me. I know I start off by saying it's because of the culture and society. But there's a part of that. All this fucking shopping is annoying. I mean, it's all a big advertisement. It's gross. So, yeah, so eating a lot of crap, which tastes delicious, by the way, and not getting to the gym, falling off schedule, not having proper food in the kitchen because we're being pulled in so many directions that we're eating out more, it causes me to feel crappy physically. I put on some weight usually. I take it right off afterwards, but it makes me feel yuck, gross, just swollen and bloated and salt infused and grease dripping from your pores. Oh, it's awful. So yeah, it makes it hard for me to enjoy it, but I know I said this last week. I'm in control, so I can choose to look at it differently, and I am. And next year will be different because of the changes I'm making. So I hope you all had a wonderful holiday, and I hope you're all not complete assholes like me. And I hope you're able to find some joy in it. So here we... Oh, you know what? I didn't even talk about it last time. So we hit episode 50 last time. 50 episodes. That's kind of a milestone. I didn't know how long this would go. And at one a month, it is slow going. But now I see I have a library of episodes behind me, and that feels pretty cool. And I'm proud of them all. I think I've done something good here, and people seem to enjoy it. And people are, it's still something that is discovered. It's not like this is a huge success. I don't know what success means. Not like this is a popular show. It has its audience, and it's a good audience, and I love it. But there's constantly people discovering it, which is cool. And so, you know, having Cameron on was great. I don't think he had ever really heard an episode before he came on, and I think he was pretty surprised by what we did on here. And I know he, I'm pretty sure he enjoyed it quite a bit. But yeah, so yeah, blah 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 blah. That's enough of that. Let's get down. Here's Ink Pulp Audio at part two with Kevin Stewart. All right, we're gonna try this again. You have no idea what I'm talking about. I had recorded this bump previously in a few days ago. Before I launched my Kickstarter, I have a Kickstarter for an art book of mine. It's a collection of concept art, thumbnails, commissions, sketches, studies, and the lovely ladies of Ink Pulp. I'm very happy with how it's coming together, how the book came together. It is a very nice collection of the past 5 years of my artwork. You can see all my growth and development. I'm very, very happy with it. Very proud of the work I've done in it. And I'm happy with where I am artistically. So I had originally recorded a bump asking you people to get involved. But I reached my goal in 90 minutes, which really kind of shook me and took me by surprise. I was very confident I'd make the goal. It was we weren't asking a lot. We were simply asking some publishing costs. And I think our goal was, initial goal was 3,000. We made that 90 minutes. I knew I'd make it. I just thought it would take a lot longer. So thank you all. Thank you all who have gotten involved. That was incredible. But I have a favor to ask of all of you, my listeners. 50 episodes in, I've had a lot of people ask about merchandise. I've had people suggest I open up a Patreon account to try to turn this into some way of making money. I do this for free, and I've put a lot of time and a decent amount of money into the equipment. But this is a passion project, and this is something I enjoy doing and I enjoy putting out there. But it would be smart of me to think about how I can at least make some money off of this. So what I'm asking of you, one of the pledge tiers on my Kickstarter is an Ink Pulp Audio t-shirt. So those of you who have been asking about merchandise, this is your chance to show me your interest in it. It's sort of a litmus test for me to see what sort of interest there would be in Ink Pulp Audio stuff. Mainly t-shirts, I guess. So, excuse me, that was terrible. Please, if you're into this podcast, consider checking out the Kickstarter. If you go to Kickstarter, it's under my art dealer, Essential Sequential. The Kickstarter is called Ink Pulp Represent or Represent. And check it out. And I am very curious to see how well these t-shirts do. It's one way I'm asking you to show me your interest in this stuff and to give back to this podcast if you feel it's worth giving back to. And if you are a fan of my artwork, on top of that, one of the pledge tiers is a t-shirt along with the art book. And while, yes, I've made my goal, we've created a stretch goal now. And if we meet that stretch goal, we are going to turn all the copies of the book from soft cover into hardcover. So ordering just a normal soft cover book, you'd get a hardcover. So I'm trying to drive it towards that. Initially, I wanted a hardcover, but because of costs, I decided to go for soft cover. I figured it was an ego thing. But there is something really nice about having sales for the book do so well that it warrants a hardcover. And so the fact that I've met my goal is great, but I'm wondering if we can reach the stretch goal and turn this into a hardcover book. And I'm really curious to see how these t-shirts do. And they're going to be these really nice quality t-shirt tri-blend thingies. So they're going to be super comfortable. I think that's it. I'm sorry to interrupt part two of the Cameron Stewart Ink Pulp audio podcast. Just please spread the word about the Kickstarter. Please get involved if you feel it's something you'd be interested in. And please don't wait. Just if it's something that sounds cool to you, go do it. Hit pause. Go do it right now. Thank you. Back to Ink Pulp Audio. I remember a question I was getting at earlier,
okay. But
we didn't get all the way into it. You were talking about why it's hard to move around and stuff,
right?
Because of the, you know, having to make new social circles.
Yeah.
Is there anything other than that that's making, is age making it difficult? Like just the physical act of doing it?
No, I don't. I'm still in pretty good shape. I don't. That's not.
I mean that. Do you find, how old are you now? Do you mind telling me?
I'm in my late 30s. I'm 39.
Okay. Yeah. So you're just a few years younger than me. Are you more tired?
At times.
Yeah.
But for the most part, no. And I'm actually, it's funny because I'm constantly surprised that I'm not in worse shape. Like I hear people talk about like, oh, my back is like I've destroyed my back or my hands.
Why
or
are you in good? Why are you able to just?
I have no idea.
You're not doing anything?
No, I'm like
I feel honestly in my 40s much better than my 30s, but I know why.
Are you going to the gym and stuff?
It's yoga and yoga, diet. Yeah. I'm very
diet. I'm working on. I'm getting better. I'm like I've just started like taking up cooking for myself now rather than just eating out all the time.
Okay.
And I used to have this, you know, thing where I had dinner with Jamie McKelvey a little while ago, and he and I are so similar in a lot of ways. And one of the things was like our work habits in relation to like eating, and we both have a really bad tendency to like, you know, sit at that drawing table for 8 hours, 10 hours straight,
right,
and not eat, and then until you're absolutely ravenous with hunger,
and
then you don't want to bother with cooking, so you'll order a pizza, and then you'll just like inhale a large pizza, and then go to sleep.
Right.
And it's funny because we were talking about this, and it was like we do exactly the same thing, and so I've stopped doing that now, and now I'm actually taking. And this is another thing, in addition to taking the day off a week or whatever, is I've learned the value of like, I used to go, I don't want to spend an hour cooking. That's bullshit. You know, like it's an hour wasted.
Yeah,
and now I'm actually like, no, that's actually a pretty good hour to like sit and just take a break from work.
Yeah, I enjoy cooking.
And I'm eating better food because I'm making it all.
Yeah, of course.
Not processed stuff.
Yeah,
whatever.
And, yeah, I'm very into non-processed.
Yeah.
A lot of organic.
And I could even see like just a change physically after even a few weeks of just doing that.
Of course.
And I have things like I signed up. There's a thing in the UK. I don't know if it's in the States. I think there's a similar thing in the States. But in the UK, there's like a snack subscription service.
Yeah, yeah, they have
and
that.
And it comes to my office and
yeah, they have NatureBox here.
Yeah, it's exactly the same thing, I think. Yeah. And those are like healthier. You know, I used to go to the store and get like a bag of Doritos or whatever. You know, like
I always thought you. I mean, you've always looked so svelte.
I have well tailored clothes. I'm not in the greatest shape, but I know that I'm not like I'm not overweight or anything.
Right,
I definitely have made some terrible diet choices in the past. But
wow, that surprises me.
I'm trying to get over it and just eat better. Yeah, I don't know. It's like I'm.
You have good genetics.
Yeah, I must because people always think I'm. Look younger than I am.
I get that, you know? Too. But yoga is a fountain of youth. Like yeah, my body feels so different.
It's the one thing that I can't seem to make space for yet is any kind of like, and I, you know, like I used to go to the gym, I used to whatever. And then, I find that it's, if I fall off that wagon, I just can't get back on it.
Going to the gym makes me perform better.
Does it?
Oh, absolutely. Especially yoga. Cause it's, as much as it's a physical workout, it's much more mental. Mm-hmm. And it's everything I wrestle with mentally, stuff we were talking about earlier, every mental war I'm fighting with myself, I'm learning to get over mm-hmm. just through the act of yoga. Mm-hmm. It's basically, and it's going to sound like what we do, you're putting yourself in an extremely physically compromising position that's extremely stressful. Mm-hmm. And you're working to find calm in that position. Hmm. And that's, I can relate that to drawing in a lot
absolutely.
Of ways.
I've never heard it described that way before.
I think,
but that makes total
I think
sense.
As an artist, when you start doing yoga, you start seeing this connection. Yeah. And I mean, a lot of people go there and it's just like, they just want the physical workout. And then they complain, like, if it's a teacher who didn't, like, make them physically exhausted, it's like, you're missing half of it.
Yeah.
Like, it's so, for me, it's more mental than anything.
Yeah.
And it's making me happier. It's making me able to deal with things so much better.
Hmm. I should definitely.
I love it.
Yeah.
I mean, I do hot yoga.
Yeah.
Which a lot of
people. I've done that once. I actually have done it once. And I wasn't the greatest at it. And I made the mistake of wearing a light colored shirt. And I remember it was like a wet t-shirt at the end of it. It was like totally transparent.
Yeah,
which
but
is
that's
very embarrassing. But
why is that embarrassing? I mean, most people in hot yoga are wearing very, I don't, all I have on is shorts.
Yeah.
I don't wear any shirt, nothing. Cause yeah. you're covered in sweat.
Yeah. It was just funny. It was cause it was like, I think I'm pretty sure I was the only man in the group.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And just wearing a soaking wet white shirt was like, you know, but I remember leaving and walking home and feeling like I could punch through steel. Like,
yeah.
I mean, it felt so good.
Yeah. I feel incredible.
Just this rush after doing it.
When my anxiety was really bad, I had Xanax not daily, but just as needed. And I would take it like once a week or something. And I walk out of yoga now feeling better than that ever made me feel.
Wow, that's amazing.
Like I feel so calm and at just centered after yeah, that.
That's
good
incredible.
Stuff.
You're selling me on it for sure.
Yeah, I mean, if you've tried,
do you do it at home or do you
no,
classes?
No, no,
you
no,
go
no,
classes?
No. You need a teacher. You need a class. Like, it's not something you do at home because for me, it's about having that instructor there to talk to you about what you should be, the little adjustments you should be making. They're actually coming around and physically adjusting you.
Yeah.
And there's the energy of the room.
Yeah.
There's a lot of that like hippy dippy shit, but it's real.
That's the thing is that the couple times that I have tried yoga, I can't get on with, you know, it's like if it's a completely
too
technical thing where if they're like talking, feel Mother Gaia flow up through your feet.
I don't go to that.
I roll my eyes at that.
I don't go to that.
You know? Yeah.
No, that if it's too much on that side, I'm out.
Yeah.
It's got to be in the middle. It's got to have some Western in it.
Yeah.
For me to it's not just flowers and flutes. That's not it. That's not it. You got to find the right class.
Yeah.
You know, like when at HeroesCon this year, Matt Wilson's wife found a hot yoga studio, so I went this year, and that was incredible.
Wow.
Incredible. But yeah, you just gotta find the right teacher, right class. That's so much. That's why I don't do it at home alone. Is you find the right teacher, and you really you form like a bond with these teachers. And
yeah, I have a real bad problem with, and it doesn't. I don't know if this applies to anywhere else in my life, but it certainly does when it comes to exercise, which is that thing that you probably had when you were a kid, where you know, you're trying to learn how to roller skate or play drums or whatever. And if you don't get it right away, then you kind of go like, well, fuck this, and you walk away from it. And that's a constant problem that I have.
But you didn't do that as an artist.
No.
That's strange to me, because you had with your art, when it doesn't go the right way, what you do is you push forward.
Well, absolutely. I'm gonna make, oh, yeah. No, absolutely.
So why not with exercise?
I don't know. But it's like a thing where it's like if I were to go to yoga and I'm like wobbling and I can't hold the pose, or it's just strenuous, and I feel really self-conscious and embarrassed. And then I go, I'm no good at that. I don't want to do
anymore. That's why you need yoga, because that's your ego and you got to silence it. And that's the mental work is to submit and let go. I know I keep saying that.
Does that silencing that ego apply elsewhere in your life?
Absolutely.
Yeah, it does. You feel you're more confident in everything? Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think if you listen to the early podcast where I have a complete mess on here, like on my intros and stuff, and you listen to where I am now, I'm much more center.
Yeah.
And I absolutely am able to see things I know I have this perverted lens that I can look through and say that you're not good at drawing or you're never going to be able to support the family on this, and all those perverted negative thoughts. And what yoga did for me was it gave me the ability to look through another lens that was real.
Right.
So I can hear those voices. And I can say, I know that's not the reality. And I actually keep a log on my notes on my phone of like, here's the negative thought that just popped in my head. And right under it, here's the reality. Mm-hmm. And I'm able to not pay attention to that voice.
Wow.
Which is very new for me.
Yeah.
Like 3 months ago.
And this is all yoga.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's the best ad for yoga I've ever heard.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it works. But I'm also I'm really investing myself into what I'm hearing the teacher say, and not just looking at this as this is going to make me look like I'm 20, but it's more what I'm getting mentally out of it. And I'm not perfect. I mean, I have my moments, but it's made me happier, stronger, more grounded, more centered, or I have the ability to pull myself back there much better than I ever did before.
Wow.
And you don't hold yourself there. It's like if you have this center point, which is the ideal place to be, you spend your life wavering around it. Now, before I was wavering to extreme ends, but now I'm able to waver a little bit and pull back and snake around that center much better. Mm-hmm. But, and I, it's not for everyone. But I don't know. I get a lot out of it.
That sounds great. I'm struggling to find the space to do it in my daily schedule. You know what I mean? And which is funny to say, because I honestly screw around a whole lot every day.
Right.
You have to make
it a priority.
I spend a lot of time reading the internet.
But I will say this, and this is a hard thing for me to understand. One of the things that I'm really trying to really working on now is things that aren't tangible. I would always write off. Like someone could say to you, that hour you go spend in yoga is going to pay you back.
Right.
Just like that day off is going to make you more productive.
Yeah.
And then it's like my logic brain, which is the bad way to look at it, is no, that's 8 hours gone taking that day off.
Yeah.
But there's no, it's not a tangible thing. You can't explain that. No, your body is going to recharge and your mind's going to have that off and you're going to be more productive. And more importantly, and how it's affecting me is I'm mentally more stable when I come back to it.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not panicking. I'm not like rushing. I'm not stressing. It's like I'm back to the playing of it all.
This is very similar to the mental recalibration that I had around cooking, because I used to think, as I said, like, cooking, it takes an hour to do whatever. And then you eat it in 5 minutes and it's like, what kind of, you know, the effort to reward ratio there is all wrong, you know, but then now I'm like, well, that's not the right way to look at it. You think of it long-term and it's like you're investing in a healthier.
Right. But not just that. Let's look at how long have you been cooking now?
Only a few months.
Okay.
Yeah.
Has your production rate gone down?
Yeah. No, I know.
That's just it.
I know.
Yoga,
it's, yeah.
Yoga, like, yeah. Like, not yoga, whatever you choose to do, exercise will be the same thing.
Yeah.
It'll just, again, that's it, tangibly, logically, it's your brain tells you, no, I'm losing an hour.
Yeah.
But you're not. Yeah. I mean, yes, you are, but you're gonna be able to come back quicker, come back faster, come back more centered.
It's honestly, it's so much more valuable than dicking around on Twitter for an hour.
Oh yeah, but, which is poison. Yeah. Which is like feeding that negative
and
shit.
I do
which...
that all the time. Like, I really do. That's pretty bad. This is another thing that Jamie and I were like talking about. It's like we spend hours a day, like just reading the internet and stuff, and reading a lot of toxic shit.
Oh, yeah, it's so bad.
It's really bad. And that was the other thing about, you know, when I was talking earlier about going through the dark phase when I first moved to Glasgow, was I spent too much time reading a lot of like negative shit that was being said about me on the internet, and that was like poisoning me, like really, really bad.
Why? I mean, it baffles me whenever negative shit is out there, but I can't imagine what is being said about you. Was it in relation to a Batgirl?
It was Batgirl stuff, yeah. Oh. About the, you know, there was that, the whole fiasco.
I can't. I got so mad. I remember I emailed you. I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah. So it was like that, the stuff about that Joker cover and stuff, and the... You know, I feel like I am at peace with how we handled that.
Yeah.
I think we did the 100% did the right thing.
Yeah, yeah. No, I know. And your response to me was so centered. I was like, I was so pissed.
Yeah. But then there's that element of the internet that, you know, is really upset about people trying to have consideration for others or whatever. And so I got, you know, I was a Gamergate target for
a hot
minute. Yeah, wow. For like 3 or 4 days.
That was a bad place.
That was awful.
Everything that's going on now is so bad.
Yeah. It was like one of the worst. You know, one of the weirdest things about that whole situation is that Stanley Kubrick is my favorite filmmaker.
Mm-hmm. Well, I thought it was David Lynch.
Lynch is way up there.
Okay.
But I think it just in terms of like... Yeah, well, I don't know. It's a hard call. Anyway, Kubrick's we'll amend that to it's one of my favorite filmmakers. And I can never in my life ever again watch Full Metal Jacket without getting to the part where Adam Baldwin's in it and going, that guy tried to ruin my life. And it's really weird. Oh, it's really, really weird to know that, you know? Like my relationship to that movie, which is previously one of my favorite movies, is irrevocably altered now because of that whole experience. And it's really, which is an odd thing to pick out and go what's a weird, but you know what I mean? Like
because it's scar tissue that what happened to you left a scar on you and that's it.
Yeah.
And that sucks.
It's such a weird thing. And I mean the experience of just being bombarded with that shit for 4 days was pretty awful. And I mean, and I am fully conscious of the fact that I am a white man, and so for me I got the briefest brush of it. If I was a woman you know it would still be going on and it would be 100 times worse than what I received, and so you know my sympathies are with the people who have to endure that daily, you know, because it was pretty rough for me. I didn't sleep for like 4 days. It was awful.
Yeah,
I was worried about like it was like if I go to sleep, what's going to happen while I'm asleep, then I won't be present to contain or control or whatever, you know.
It's I'll yoga wake time, up to Cameron. Some I'm serious. It's just going to give you, give you some mental clarity.
Yeah.
Like just get off the internet. Like, you got to be on it. Yeah. You got to be on it to some extent, but you can get in and get out.
Yeah.
Don't wallow in it.
Yeah. I don't do it anymore. I was in a weird mental space and I was actively seeking it out. I was like going and trying to read. I'm like, what the hell are these people saying? Right. And going and reading and then just reading awful, awful things. And it really kind of put me in a dark place. And then I sort of came out of it and I was like, why am I doing this? This is stupid. First of all, why do I even give a shit about what these people think of me?
Right. Anyway? Of course.
Because I don't.
Exactly.
You know, if I were to see them in person or whatever, I'd be like, I don't want to talk to you at all. Like,
yeah, so. And I don't even think that a lot of the people that speak on the internet, they're not knowledgeable on the subject they're speaking about.
Oh, yeah.
They haven't really read what happened. Like, I saw today, there's this comedian who went on a fat rant. She's like a YouTuber, and I don't think she's that funny, but she's a comedian. Mm. And it was obviously done for shock and trying to be funny. Mm-hmm. And then I guess she got fired, and then, like, I saw someone post on Facebook, justice. Mm. It's like, firing a comedian for being irreverent is justice? Mm. Like, what world is this? Mm. I just found it ridiculous. And what it led me to believe was, like, this person who posted justice really didn't listen to the full rant.
Sure.
And didn't really research what it had. They just saw a quick little snippet.
Yeah.
And gut responded to that.
Yeah.
And that's what's going on.
Yeah. I mean, I over the last couple of years, I would say definitely over the last year, I've been taking a lot of time to educate myself in just in areas of empathy and compassion.
Yeah, yoga.
And things. And, yeah. listening to when people are upset about these things, this kind of humor is hurtful or offensive or whatever, and kind of, there definitely was a time when I would have been like, yeah, fuck it, this is a joke, whoever, you know, lighten up.
Sure.
But now, I definitely am taking a much greater...
Let me ask you this. Do you feel like everyone is very quick right now to call victim? And I understand what you're saying to have empathy for others. I agree with all that. But at what cost are we playing this victim role? To like as a child, I was very small, like tiny. I'm a short guy, but I had no meat on my bones. Mm-hmm. I was Jewish, and those were my points of being teased as a kid.
Sure.
And out of my friends, I was physically just easy to blow over compared to all of them. Mm-hmm. And then I was the Jewish kid. So those are the things that I got teased about as a kid. And those, like, physically, like, I remember, like, the big guy in the group just sitting on me. I just couldn't move, and I was so pissed, and he was laughing. And but these are things that shaped me, taught me to deal with things. Mm-hmm. And made me who I am. And I like the fact that I'm short. I've never, like, wished I was tall. Mm-hmm. I'm not quiet about the fact that, like, I don't try to hide these things about myself. And I know they're nothing, like, being short and Jewish is not like, oh my God, how'd you deal with that? I'm not saying that.
Right.
But learning to deal with stuff, like growing a thick skin and learning to, I think those are important lessons.
Absolutely. I mean, and yeah, I was teased and stuff and whatever. I would think that, I mean, one major difference is that, and this might sound bombastic to say, but short people aren't being shot by police in the streets.
Right.
Every
and
day.
I'm not relating it to like, that. You know,
yeah. So what I'm saying is, like, when there are sections of our society who are living, you know, under the thumb, mm-hmm. constantly,
sure.
day in, day out, and whether that's because they're black or they're gay or they're transgender,
right,
or
right, right,
whatever. And I think we're kind of hitting a point now where people, you know, people are saying, like, oh, everyone's hypersensitive and whatever. And I honestly just think we're hitting a tipping point where people are just sort of saying, like, fuck it, we're not going to take this anymore.
Yeah.
And they've been given a platform to say it.
Right. But
and
it's
okay,
fuck it, we're not going to take it anymore. Good. But I don't know. I feel like sometimes it's just, but complaining about it, I don't know if that's the way to go. I guess
I definitely think that there are the people who, you know, whatever, who tweet a bunch of shit and don't ever do anything else.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
And that.
I guess the way I'm trying to look at everything, and it's with extreme empathy, is that, well, if everyone's out there saying my group's important, my group's important, my group's important, which they are, well, I think what we really need to get to is that we're all just individuals, and that the more that we assemble these groups, that it's like this group is being, and it's not that it is real. Like those groups are targeted and they are put down upon. But I think I guess the personal responsibility is what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. Is like I just try to look at everyone as an individual, not as a member of a group, and treat them as so.
That's yeah, and I get. And it's not. I get where you're coming from saying that, but the problem with that is that unfortunately
the world doesn't operate right.
And that attitude of like, well, I don't see people as different. I see everybody the same, or I look at people as individuals, is based on the presumption that everybody is fairly treated or equally treated.
Right. Well, and they're not.
And we're not.
Right. No. Yeah. And this is like, this is me.
And
I'm
100%. Oh, very aware of the fact that I am a straight white man.
Right.
I'm in the super privileged category. So far be it from me to speak on behalf of black people or gay people,
sure,
or whatever. But I'm making a real effort, and it was largely sparked by that Batgirl thing,
right?
Where we
right.
did that issue of Batgirl.
That was an educational experience.
Absolutely. Okay. It totally was. And that gave me greater sense of life. It made me feel a much greater responsibility of I have to like educate myself about this stuff more. And this is the thing, like what Twitter does for me that I found very valuable. And it used to be when I first started, I was like an early Twitter user. I started using it in like 2007.
Okay.
And for a very long time, Twitter was just, you know, jokes and bullshit and mm-hmm. whatever and screwing around. And what I've done over the last year or so is I've tried to curate a list of people that I follow that are people that are very different from me. And I uh-huh. follow a lot of gay people or mm-hmm. black people or whatever. Or if I don't follow them, I follow people who retweet a lot of that stuff.
Sure.
So it is a constant presence in my Twitter.
Social awareness.
And yes, absolutely. Okay. And it is a thing where, and it can sometimes it is a real drag. Sometimes it is like I open Twitter and I read through it and it is, I'm scrolling through people complaining about how terrible it is. And it is not fun. But at the same time, that's, you know, as someone who is in a super privileged category, maybe I should feel uncomfortable about these things. And I think that the one of the biggest values that Twitter has for me now is that it pierces the bubble that I am unwittingly finding myself in.
Okay, that's a good point.
You know?
Sure.
And I can, at times, if nothing else, I can read through and I can, and someone will talk about, you know, social injustice.
Mm-hmm.
And it just makes me conscious of it.
Sure, okay.
In a way that I think is really valuable. And it's not enjoyable a lot of the time
right,
to say,
right.
but it's valuable, you know, to like to be aware of this.
No, that's good. I guess, you know, while we're sitting here trying to figure out something that can't be figured out, I think the difference now is the internet gives everyone a voice.
Yes.
So you're going to hear a lot more than you ever did before.
Absolutely. Yeah. And they have a direct line to you. And we're, you know, we are public figures to a degree,
sure.
you know, mm-hmm. and people will speak their mind to us. And it's not always going to be good. Excuse me. And there's, you know, I block a lot of people who are, you know, if they're just like, you know, abusive or, you know, I blocked a ton of people during that Gamergate thing and whatever. And, because I don't want to hear that.
But
I try and listen to the people who are not angry or if they're angry, not abusive to me, but are passionate about what they're saying.
Sure.
And I feel like I should afford them the respect of listening to them.
Yeah.
You know. That Batgirl thing was. The first one, the issue 37.
Right, that's what I'm talking about.
That was a incredibly difficult thing to navigate, and we were all like really, really upset by it.
Yeah, I don't want to stir it all up again because you're going to get a bunch of shit again.
Yeah, but what I was going to say was that ultimately what it did for me personally was it opened my eyes to a right. lot of things that have changed the way that I perceive things.
Okay.
And so now when you know, when someone writes a think piece on Salon or whatever about mm-hmm. a comedian, you know, telling jokes or whatever, I don't automatically dismiss it out of hand. I'll read it and I'm not going to say that I always agree with it, or sometimes I don't. But I'm willing to actually listen and go. Right. You know, if someone says, "Hey, this comedian who's made," you know, I'm not familiar with the video you're talking about.
That popped up. That comedian, I don't even think is funny. It's just something that popped up that just made me. I was just illustrating a point how people are knee jerking.
Oh,
and,
certainly.
And not reading.
Yeah, on both sides.
Right.
I mean, like left and right. You know, like PC, non-PC, whatever. Yeah. Like people who are. You know, Twitter strips away nuance and whatever in context,
and
people react to. I see a lot of people.
A lot of communication is stripped of nuance. Yep. Text messaging, yep. and email.
I see a lot of people who, you know, like just jump on a. I see this in comics a lot, which makes me very uncomfortable. Is people just kind of like hearing something about somebody, and then everybody just decides that, you know, based on the fact that everybody else on Twitter is saying it. And
right.
You know, and a lot of the time, you know, it's valid, and sometimes I don't think it is. And it's all incredibly complicated and difficult.
Yeah, it's true.
But as I say, I mean, I'm just trying whenever possible to be more empathetic and just paying more attention and listening and not taking that knee-jerk response of like, you know, you're too sensitive or you're too whatever.
I think we could all do a better job of that.
Yeah.
All right, let me I keep trying to get back to this question.
Okay.
With the roots. I don't know why I'm fixated on this. Do you want to settle and grow roots and have a family? Is that something that you think about and want, or you're just
I go back and forth. I mean, like, I'm definitely thinking about it more, you know. I think mm-hmm. the as I'm entering into a new stage in my life or whatever, I mean, I certainly think about it, and I don't know where that is yet.
Okay.
Like, I often say, and it sounds kind of morbid to say, but I'm like, I don't know where I'm going to die yet, you know. Like, there's some people who are like, I've found the city that I love, not even the city. I've just found the place I love.
I haven't found that.
And I want to stay here. And this is where I'm going to buy my, like, I don't.
See, I find that's interesting because I'm not living based on choice. Like, look geographically.
Right.
I'm kind of living where we kind of fell and where it kind of works for the family.
Right.
I mean, it's inexpensive where I live. We have everything we need. It's very convenient where I live.
Yeah.
I don't love where I live.
Yeah.
I tolerate where I live. I don't hate it. I mean, I don't mean tolerate like it sucks and I'm putting
up
with it.
But yeah,
it's just there.
Yeah.
And I want to live somewhere where like it's inspiring.
Where do you know where that is? Do you
have
an idea?
I've never been out of the country. It's a problem. Right. I mean,
oh, so you're not even talking within the state. You're talking about like,
Within the states, I have areas I'd like to live in, but I feel really gross about a lot of things in this country. Just gross. Mm-hmm. And I just don't want to be a part of a lot of it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
The medical system, big pharmaceutical companies,
sure.
The fucking shit in the food drives me insane.
The fact that Trump could actually be like a viable.
Do you think so? I mean, I understand.
Yeah. Like the fact that he's taken seriously at all by anybody.
I just wonder how if I'll leave. I'll have to leave. Yeah. I can't live in a country where a man like that's president. I can't.
Yeah.
I can't.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
And it's, I mean, it's
I can't
hard.
Believe that anything of this is other than entertainment right now. I just believe that when it comes down to it, it's just, I don't believe his intentions are real.
Oh, I don't think so for 1 minute.
And I don't believe that all the hype around him is really reflecting what the votes will be at all.
I don't think so.
I think it's all just entertainment right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's he's branding and marketing and people are just responding.
He's keeping himself relevant in whatever awful, destructive
way. Yeah, exactly. Wrecking ball way.
Yeah. But it's just back to, like, it's, it's more difficult for you because you have family. Mm-hmm. You can't go wandering the way that I do.
I floated the idea. This is funny because this relates to you. I floated the idea. I said to my family, I was like, I think we should, over summers, think about going places and living for a month or two in different areas, which was met with much resistance because the logistics of it are tricky, but I kept saying, but it's not something you cannot figure out. And I float.
Does your wife have the ability to do that?
She, no. Well, it would be hard for her. It was hard for her. Like, her whole family came from Europe to Baltimore and settled. And her and her brother were like, really one of the first ones to ever leave. And it was very difficult for her to leave when we moved to Savannah. So she's gotten used to being that far away. But for a month or two, I think she could do it. Yes. But I said, I started naming places where I know people, like cartoonists, that at least we'd have, you know, a gateway to the area. Like, I mentioned Matteo in Italy, and I mentioned you in Scotland, and Declan in Ireland. Mm-hmm. And, this is all just talk, but everyone got excited about Scotland. Just saying. You asked a question, and I was saying I've never been out of the country. And I feel, where do I want to live?
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like I have so much to experience.
But you have, you might not know, but do you have a place that you've romanticized or whatever? Like, you know, I've always wanted to live in Italy, or I've always.
Yeah, yeah. I'd like to live on the Mediterranean, somewhere, Greece or Italy.
Nice. Yeah.
Somewhere like that.
Yeah.
Like in a very small seaside village type place, very off the grid. Mm-hmm. Would be awesome. Mm-hmm. Countryside. I don't know if I could deal with the grayness of Scotland, because that really affects me.
Yeah, it's. I mean, the thing about that is that there is pretty reliably every day the sun will come out.
Yeah,
but it'll only be for a short period of time.
Yeah, it sounds like Washington State.
It kind of reminds you that it's there.
It'll that's a tease.
Suddenly it'll part and it'll be blue sky and sunny for about half an hour, but then it'll go gray again. That's kind of a drag. It is.
Yeah, you know, see, but
it's
mean,
great for photography.
Sure, of course. But, no, it's beautiful. Yeah. I'm just saying how I'm like a solar battery.
Yeah.
And I get very, very depressed when the sun isn't like really like.
Yeah,
that's
no,
one thing about Atlanta that I do really enjoy is that sun is always pounding down.
Yeah.
Most days, and I thrive off that.
Yeah, for sure.
Whereas like in Baltimore, it was gray frequently, and it just was beating me up. So I don't. I mean, we could go live there for a couple months in the summer, but I don't know. In the States, I really enjoyed Colorado. We were just there for a convention, but the air there made me feel very good, and I liked that. Asheville, North Carolina, I loved. It's in the mountains in North Carolina, but it's very, very progressive. Mm-hmm. Everything is locally grown, locally sourced. All the restaurants are very proud that the ingredients they use is, you know, our meat comes from this farm, and our produce comes from this farm, and it's all within a couple miles of the restaurant, and the market's there all the same way. Mm-hmm. And that I really liked. And it was, while it is in the South, it is the most progressive. It's like Portland, I imagine. I haven't been to Portland, but that's
Portland's great.
Very progressive area. Mm-hmm. And it seemed like that, like how I imagine Portland to be. Mm-hmm. And it's beautiful. It's in the Blue Ridge Mountains.
Do you think you could, over a summer or whatever, like take your just want to check the time, 6:30.
Oh, should we go? Well, we can wrap it up.
Maybe.
Okay.
I'm having a lot of fun, though. I kind of want to do this forever.
Well, is the bus just one swoop and they're done?
I think so.
But it's walking distance?
Yeah, but I don't know where.
I can find out where. Okay. I can just text care. We can cab it if we have to.
Yeah, let's do that. Okay. We'll keep going.
Okay.
We'll edit this part out, I guess.
No. I don't
just leave it.
Wait, hold on.
Keep it real.
Oh, my headphones just died. Oh. That's right. I thought the sound went off. No, I don't edit it. This whole thing is so organic. I put it together. I record an intro and I put an outro song and I don't change any of the content.
Oh, cool.
And if anything is like something that you worry about later, generally what I do is just can it.
Right.
And do a new one.
Oh, really? Oh, wow. Okay.
At some point when we can.
Interesting.
But yeah, you were asking me about Asheville, about moving.
Could you do the summer, like, just go not overseas, but just a different city or a different? Wherever,
yeah, that'd be
like,
much easier. That? Like, that'd
just,
be easy.
Just kind of just get comfortable with.
Yeah, I think what I need to do is we just need some financial security.
Sure.
To be able, not even security, just be able to afford to do it. That's it. That's really what it boils down to. As far as just going somewhere for the summer, we just need, because I can do my job anywhere.
Yeah.
So we can be mobile, and the kids aren't in school. My wife would have to take off work for a couple months.
Yeah.
So that would be a loss of income, but we're just not there financially to be able to do it yet.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping things start going a lot better, and then we can do something like that. But
yeah, I hope so too. Because I mean, it's so valuable.
Yeah, I want my kids. Like, I feel like that's something. Like, if I could take them to other parts of the world and they could experience other cultures, it's going to make their lives so much richer.
Yeah,
totally. I would guess.
Yeah, I mean that's one of the. Anytime I've met people who haven't traveled a whole lot, it's like, and I appreciate it's all, you know, it's for different reasons, but sometimes the occasional time I've met people who just don't seem to be interested.
No, I'm extremely interested.
And I'm always baffled at that. I was like,
I think what prevented me from doing, yeah, I think what prevented me from doing it when I was younger was I was so focused on trying to get this career going, and it took so long that I was just too focused on that, and the thought, like, any time doing that would have been time away from trying to get the career going, mm-hmm. and that was just, I don't know, I was hyper focused on it.
Yeah, for sure.
So I'm hoping to change that.
I really want, what I would love to do, and this is something that I don't know if I'll ever achieve or what, but I'm working towards a part where I feel financially stable enough that I can take like a year off.
Oh my God.
And not do anything.
Wouldn't you go crazy? Could you do that? Do you think you could do that?
I would. No, I mean, I wouldn't say that I wouldn't draw.
Right. But it would be just for fun.
But it would just be drawing for fun and not like I got to hit this deadline and whatever. And, but if I take that year off, I just want to travel around for a year.
Yeah.
Like, I would love to do that. I would love to just, you know, and then maybe I just draw while I'm drawing.
I bet
you draw a travelogue or something, you know? Like,
see, this is one thing I'm trying to figure out. There are artists, you know, not cartoonists, but filmmakers, who that's how they live, is they live by their what do I want to do voices, and they find success in that. Mm-hmm. Are we holding ourselves back from experiencing that?
Yeah, because I think so.
Yeah.
I think there's a, I mean, the financial, I mean, your financial responsibilities are greater than mine because you have children and a mortgage, I'm assuming, and, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
I don't.
Right.
So I have an easier time of like, I can roll the dice and go to this other place or whatever. But at the same time, I'm still governed by a fear of – I grew up poor.
Yeah.
And now, thankfully, I would no longer classify myself as poor.
Right.
And I'd never want to go back to being poor. And so I have this like this fire under me all the time to like don't get poor again, don't whatever. But at the same time, yeah, there's an exchange – for not doing necessarily the thing that you want to do, you're doing the thing that you feel like you have to do. And I've had a very fortunate career in that I've been pretty much able to pick what I wanted to do.
Right.
I've never found myself, or very rarely have I found myself working on an issue of Green Lantern that I was just doing because I had to make rent that month. Like,
yeah.
I've been very lucky to not be in that position.
Yeah, I don't want to be in that position.
Oh, who does, really? You know, like.
Well, I mean, there's just some people that's what, you know, they're just, that's the type of career. They're just happy to take whatever the job is and do
it. Yeah.
You know, they just don't have that nagging voice that says, no, this is what I really want to do.
Yeah. But I think all the time I'm like, I go like, there's a fear. There's definitely a fear of like, I think a lot of it for me is like when you're working on Batman, say,
mm-hmm.
That's something that's like bigger than you. Mm-hmm. And there's a sort of a comfort in that.
Sure.
Because
yes.
it's safe. If it sucks, you kind of have the excuse of going like, well, I'm working for a big corporation and whatever, and they interfered
right.
with
but
it or whatever.
But if it succeeds, you
like
also
that.
Have the, it's Batman.
Certainly. But if you go and do your own graphic novel,
yeah,
and you self-publish it or whatever, it's like that is incredibly scary because it's your thing, it's your idea, it's your
right,
everything.
Right. You're putting yourself out there.
You're totally putting yourself out there naked.
Yeah,
and inviting, you know, people to punch you in the groin, and it's
right,
and and that can be really terrifying. And,
right. Sure. Sure.
So. I would probably be in the position that I probably could do that. I probably could, if I wanted, not do work for hire stuff and go and do entirely my own thing. But it's very scary. And I will say that fear does definitely hold me back from
okay.
doing it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and I mean, it's not like I've never done it. Like I did Cintitolo and I'm
right.
incredibly proud of that book. And,
sure.
But I did that as like a side project.
Right. I remember you told me Sundays.
Was
yeah. That was your Sunday thing.
Batman.
Right.
So I had the security, and then on Sundays, yeah, I was doing my side project. So I managed to get it in there, but this idea of like, I'm just going to quit everything and go and do another book, a follow-up, is very, very scary.
Yeah, it's something that like lately in therapy that I'm talking about is how fear has kind of made my decisions in life.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at how people who don't let fear make any of their decisions, which people I might have classified as reckless or careless at some point, but are successful, that and maybe I'm cutting the opportunities off, or I'm preventing the success from happening by doing what I think is safe.
Yeah. It could very well be.
Yeah, yeah. It's just something that I'm really trying to wrap my head around because I would love to just let go. And, you know, there's the side of me that's like, how irresponsible do you want to be? But then there's the other side. Or maybe that's when it'll all just blow open for you.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
It's an interesting because
it's really. It's
I mean,
like,
when you read biographies of certain filmmakers or musicians and you're just like, how did they live that way? And it's like, that's just the way they lived. But it allowed them to create what they created. And they didn't hold themselves back from doing that.
Yeah.
So, you know, am I doing that? Like, it's just something I'm trying to figure out.
A comics is a weird thing, too, where, I mean, like, so much of what is being considered legitimate is if you're doing, like, corporate work for hire work. Like, that, like, so much of it is built around that. Like, self-publishing your own book, I mean, now it's better than it used to be, but, I mean, you know, there are some people who don't regard you as being like a real artist until you've drawn Spider-Man.
Yeah, right, exactly.
You know,
you worked from Marvel. Well, then you're real, or you do Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Then you're big shit.
Exactly. Yeah, and so there's comfort in that when you're doing that, you're like, I'm part of the industry. I'm like,
right. And there's also safety in that.
Absolutely. Totally. Yeah. But yeah, I think about it, you know, a lot. I think about it a lot of just like, and again, as I say, I've been very lucky to be able to choose what I've worked on, but a lot of what I've done has been work for hire stuff,
mm-hmm.
which, and I always try and do a good job, and I always try, you know, and it's always been really satisfying. I've worked with amazing people.
Yeah, you've had
so
a really
lucky to
great career.
With people that I've worked with. But at the same time, my ultimate goal would be to do exclusively my own stuff.
Do you have a way of making that goal happen? Are you working towards it?
I'm working towards it. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. I mean, the stuff that I've been doing lately is stuff that I feel, you know, are not a swan song, but in a way to like position myself for a pivot.
Okay.
So that I can go and do, you know, more of my own work.
Yeah, I think I'm doing the same thing.
And I enjoy collaboration very much.
Yeah.
And a lot of the time it's funny because a lot of the time it's easier because, you know, you go, oh, well, this story's already planned out for me, so I don't have to worry about that. I just have to figure out how to execute it. And then there's times when it's frustrating and you know, maybe you're not entirely invested in the story that you're drawing, or there's one scene that you can't stand draw, you know, and mm-hmm. So there's always the push and pull of that. And Cintillo is the thing that I'm the most proud of. It's the book that's the most rewarding for me because okay. It was the one that was entirely me.
Right,
like I wasn't
right.
collaborating with anybody on that. It was every single step of the way was me and me alone.
Mm-hmm.
And
you did that sort of improvisationally where you didn't plan too far ahead. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah.
I find that I get in my own way because I start thinking I have to plan it too much.
Oh yeah, that was
and that prevents me from doing it.
Yep. So there was a funny thing. So I started doing that when we were all doing webcomics together.
Right.
It was like me and Ramon and Carl and mm-hmm. Andy Blanger and, you know, some others. And we were all doing these webcomics. And we all launched them simultaneously.
What was the name of the site? I remember that.
It was originally called Transmission X.
That's what I remember.
And it was really super dated 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, like, we launched it and everything, and it had this, like, you know, we had like a radio tower and getting a signal
that.
And stuff. And I remember like it went live and I was looking at it and I was like, this looks 10 years old already. And so we tried to like, but everyone was sort of like already married to the name and we tried to like modernize it a little bit and we just called it TX.
Right.
And we tried to do like a flat, like Apple kind of logo for uh-huh. it and whatever. And, but what was really interesting about that whole project was that every single one of us originally started doing a different project. And like Carl did not do Charles Christopher first. He was doing a thing called Baby Cowboy, which was like a Western
yeah.
strip about a baby. Really, really funny. And he did like a couple of them and the joke ran dry or whatever. And then uh-huh. he decided to do Charles Christopher instead. And Ramon was going to do like a hard boiled noir detective story. And I was originally going to do it was kind of an on the nose homage to those old like Steve Canyon, mm-hmm. Johnny Hazard mm-hmm. kind of newspaper strips about a female pilot.
Mm-hmm.
And I drew like a bunch of pages of it or anything. But as I was working on it, I began being crippled. It was the first thing I'd ever written for myself. And I became crippled by this thought of like, this has got to be great. And I have
right.
to like, every scene that I set up now has to pay off beautiful. I wanted to have this like Alan Moore level of precision to the whole
right,
thing.
Right.
And I became terrified of it. And like everything that I was writing, I was like, oh God, is this going to fit later on? And the crucial thing was that it became not fun anymore. And the whole point of doing those things was to do something that was fun. So I kind of was like, all right, I put that away and I started something new and I decided that I'm just going to like make it up as I go
uh-huh.
and not really have a fully formed idea. And I just started, and I'd had this dream and, the next day I drew that dream as like a little 8-panel strip. And I thought, okay, this will be, and it was a literal transcription of the dream that I had.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, all right, well, this will be kind of the first page of whatever this is.
Okay.
And I just kind of made it up as I went and I didn't do it forever. I mean, I hit a point about halfway through where, or three quarters of the way through, I was like, all right, now I've made this mess. Now I have to clean it up.
Okay.
And that's when I started sitting down and more, you know, giving it a lot more structure and thinking like, okay, here's what I've established now. Now, how do I bring this together?
Okay.
There was a lot more work, you know, quote, writing the second half of it than
okay.
there was the first half. The first half was just playing a fun game of, you know, like in improv, there's the yes and
yeah.
kind of
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's basically what I was doing that game with myself. I was like
okay.
drawing a bit of the story and then kind of going, and then what happens? And then what happens? And then this happens. And that was exhilarating. It was actually really fun.
Yeah. I'd imagine that that's what allowed you to do it.
Yeah. And thinking of it as, a big experiment as just like, and it, maybe this will work out, maybe it won't, you know, whatever, but it's just something.
You gave yourself the freedom to do it instead of the prison to not do it.
And it was Lynch that inspired me for that, actually.
Yeah, I remember you told me that.
It was Inland Empire that I saw, which it was the first movie that Lynch shot on digital video.
Mm-hmm.
And I was reading an interview with him, and he was talking about how that gave him such confidence to just do anything. Because with film, you have to kind of commit to it because it's a finite thing and it's expensive and whatever. Whereas you get a couple of digital video cameras and you can just shoot and shoot and shoot. And that gave him this confidence to just be like, I'm just going to fuck around and do whatever I want. And the fact that he did that, and then I went and saw that movie, and it was still, very affecting.
Right.
And I knew that it was a kind of an improv movie, but it still carried this real weight to it. And this, like, it affected me on a very deep level, as most of his movies do. I was like, well, that's what I want to do. Like, I want it. So, and I realized it was like, you can just sort of make it. And this is the thing. It's like novelists, when they're writing.
Yeah, they just write.
They make it up as they go.
Right.
What they have the benefit of doing is being able to go back
and
tweak it and edit it and whatever, and stuff that they came up with late in the story. They can go back and revise the beginning and whatever. You know, I was basically doing a first draft in public.
Right.
And having to commit to that first draft right away.
Right.
Which made it a little more difficult, you know, because there were definitely things where I would go, oh, I would have done this differently if I'd known this is where the story would go or whatever. But
sure.
But the having that sort of like this idea of like, I'm just going to let my subconscious take me where it's going to go. And that's okay.
I think that's how what I'm coming to the conclusion very recently is that's as an artist, how we have to be.
Yes.
It's, I've had this paralyzing trying to make things perfect thing that's just kind of like consumed me to the point of either I don't do something or I just make myself miserable in the act of doing it.
Yeah.
Because I'm, again, taking away the joy of just playing and letting it all go. And
I really love when kids will give me their comics.
Mm-hmm.
When, like, at a Comic-Con, like, some 11-year-old will have a comic that they've done. And looking through them, and they're exactly that. They're just made up on the fly.
Yeah, my kids
and
do
they're
it.
They're so pure.
Yeah,
and
that's
so,
what I look at them.
So
like,
funny.
Don't lose that.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's like, I haven't been like, well, when a comic, you got to think about this. And I don't say any of that. It's just like, fuck the
just
rules.
Let them go,
just do it.
And they're so good too. Like they're crudely drawn or whatever. But I find that they're so funny, and not in a way like where I'm mocking them. It's genuinely funny.
Yeah. Yeah. When they're good, like my daughter has a really interesting sense of timing that I don't know where that comes from. She can tell a joke in three or four panels and hit all the right beats really well.
Yeah.
I've never sat down and talked to her about that. She just does it.
Yeah. You pick it up from.
Yeah. I mean, they read a lot of fucking comics.
Yeah. So it's probably just absorbed from there. So, but yeah, I think that that fear of like, I got to make all of this perfect and make sense. And I, you know, what I set up in page one has to pay off on page 300 or whatever. You'll go crazy, I think, if you think that way.
Yeah.
At least in the beginning. I mean, I'm sure when you're an experienced, super experienced, right? Like when you're Neil Gaiman or whatever, maybe you can plan that stuff out a little better and you've got, you know, but I bet, you know, I don't know.
But even with the drawing, not just in the writing, but the drawing too, I felt like I was just trying to make everything correct and perfect. And
that was the other thing that Cinti Tolo did for me, was that I drew that with a deliberate kind of like.
Yeah, I remember you talking to me about
that. I'm not going to make. I don't. Okay, if that hand's a little fucked up, it doesn't matter.
That's what I'm trying to do right now. Just
I have to remind myself of this all the time. I'm doing it on Fight Club sometimes too, where I'll spend so long working on a panel, and then I realize I was like, no one will ever notice this. No one will ever notice that this hand is weird, you know, like it doesn't matter. It's like it's just enough to get what the image is supposed to be and move on. Like that's.
Yeah. I find myself now like I want to get to this place and I'm trying to get there where I just kind of throw the drawing out on the page and then just take a brush and blah right over it. Yeah. And just like without trying to make a proper mark, without trying to worry about anything. And like I just want to capture that spontaneity of a sketch without a concern for too many things. Is this right? Is this wrong? Like I don't want it to be a complete mess.
Sure.
But I've also got to trust that I've spent this many years learning anatomy and perspective that
you know how to draw.
Right. I have to convince myself that I know how to draw.
You know how to draw.
Like I look at like I don't know how to pronounce it. Ian McKay in
The
concept artist.
Right. Ian McHugh or
something like that. Like I look at his sketches and I'm just like, that's what I should be doing. Yeah. It's just noodling it down.
Yeah.
And like buildings should look like they're all kind of toppling over on each other, but there's such character in them. Yeah. And that's where I want to get to. So I'm finding ways to get there now. Mm-hmm. And I'm just curious after a few more issues, what it'll be like.
I'll tell you what was a huge help for me. And I know that Sean Murphy will kill me for saying this, but switching over to digital gave me enormous amount of confidence.
I went digital. That actually opened, I'm realizing now, it opened up the wormhole for me.
Mm. Oh, of like endless fixing and stuff?
Not just making things perfect. Not fixing. It wasn't like just making everything perfect. Where like there's something about, like I just recently went back to pure tactile work where I'm thumbnailing pencil and paper. I'm penciling on the board where when I'm on the computer, and I've been doing it for years now. I haven't been inking on there, but I did ink on there for a period. But there's something about just getting on the paper and knowing, like, I'm just going to scribble right here and let the ink figure out. There's something about being on that Cintiq where it doesn't have that feeling. Mm. Like I feel like. Let's say, for example, you have a panel and it's a close-up. On the Cintiq, I'd figure out where the neck connects to the shoulders and how that all... And like, whereas when I'm drawing with pencil, I'm like, I could just scribble in a shadow here around the eye and draw nothing else.
Right.
And let it be.
Right.
Like something I'd see in a Bill Sienkiewicz book.
Right.
On the Cintiq, and I'm not blaming the material. I'm just talking about how my mind
it's
is
your
working.
Relationship too.
Getting back to the pencil and paper feels more like I can play.
Right.
Whereas on the Cintiq, when I'm penciling, you know, it's not. It's taking out a lot of the play.
I'm exactly the opposite.
Funny. I get it.
Because for me, the fact that it's digital and I'm not committing to anything, gives me the confidence to fuck around or like
I'll be
a little more expressive with the line work or whatever.
When I'm
drawing on paper.
I don't know how to on the Cintiq, how to say, Sean, when you go and ink this, just be expressive here.
Right.
Whereas on the board, for some reason, I can do that.
Yeah, interesting.
And it's also faster. Yeah. I'm going so much faster now.
That's so weird. I'm exactly the opposite.
But when I first went digital, it sped me up
because
I was penciling to perfection
before
that. And now it's allowed me to let go. I've been feeling boiling in my gut.
Yeah.
Like I need to get to paper.
I barely pencil now. I'm the most basic layouts.
See, digital, I get that, but you're inking digitally.
And then I just go right to the drawing and...
But you're inking digitally, correct?
I'm inking digitally.
Okay, so then...
But I'm doing, like, I would say, if you were to see, like, some of the layouts that you've seen for Backrel or whatever are a little more tight because I was working for somebody else.
But
when I'm working for myself, my layouts are super loose.
You're getting there. You saw my layouts on Batman. They were ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's like, what am I doing?
Yeah.
I mean, I was proud of them. I think they're pretty.
Yeah.
And they work, but I'm putting in too much work.
Yeah. I'm at the stage now where I would say like 85% of the drawing is happening in the ink stage.
That's where I want to get more and more towards.
And digital helps me with that because if I'm doing it and it's not going well and I'm going down the wrong path.
Erase it or control Z
or whatever. Yeah. Or if I want to just be a little more, and I find that there's a lot of expressiveness in my drawings now that when I was working on paper, I would be really cold and precise and mm-hmm. like trying to, I just wanted to make sure that it looked right. And so I would do like these slow, careful drawings and they're all very, I think a lot of them are very stiff and cold looking. Whereas now I have a much, you know, scratchier line. Like mm-hmm. I used to do these very smooth lines.
Yeah, I was the same
and
way.
And now I like the rougher,
I think this is evolution.
Lines. Yeah, oh yeah.
I think what happened for me was I was hitting that point in evolution where I was really ready to let go. And one thing that would help me let go was going to something that I wasn't comfortable with because it wasn't part of my regular practice. Mm-hmm. So getting back to board and pencil was like letting go of my security blanket. And as silly as that sounds, I even like just started using a brand of brush I haven't used in years mm-hmm. just because it's a clumsier brush. And just not having the security of those tools that I know I can make it perfect with is allowing my brain to disconnect and let it go more. Oh, I don't think it's necessarily the medium of the Cintiq or the paper. I think it's because I was comfortable on the Cintiq and my mind was like, get away from comfort. Like I was saying earlier, it's silly for me to say the things I'm doing that are getting away from comfort, but I think it was a timing thing. If I had been on board and I'm like, I need to get away from comfort and jumped onto the Cintiq, I might have had the same results.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah. I look at physical artwork now that I see people do, and I do occasionally have these pangs of nostalgia.
See, I love my favorite. Like, I did everything digitally for a mini series, and in the end, I really missed what I'm getting really into now. I just always missed the brush mm-hmm. when I did it, but what I'm really getting into now is just really trying to get somewhere where I'm really expressionistic in the inks. Mm-hmm. And I just love the uncertainty of it that a computer doesn't give you.
Right.
It's, you know, how dry is it this mark versus the last mark?
Right.
Let me add a little water. Now is it too wet? Just run with whatever it gives you. That's something I'm enjoying.
It's funny because I'm figuring out ways to like digitally replicate.
You can.
But it's not the same. It's not quite the same.
For me, it's really just feeling that brush scrape against that paper. I just love that feeling, and I did miss it. I inking digitally was cool, and I really found a way to replicate exactly what I was doing.
Yeah.
Traditionally and digitally, to the point where in the same mini series, I switched from one page to the next, and you can't see the transition.
Yeah.
But I was also inking very precision based.
Yeah.
Traditionally, and so when I went digitally, and it was like I was just doing precision based inking.
Yeah. I'd like to go and maybe as an experiment, do a story on paper again and see how it goes. But it's one of those things where I feel like because I'm rusty working that way, I mm-hmm. wouldn't want to do it on something.
See, that's why I'm enjoying it
for myself. You know,
I'm doing it on the book I'm working on.
Yeah.
I'm just like, fucking let it go. Stop worrying. Yeah. Again, that like I need to tell myself, Sean, you can actually draw.
Yeah.
And what I've done is just turned off the voice that says I can't.
Yeah.
And I've turned off the voice that says I can.
Yeah.
And I'm just doing it. And then when one issue's down, I'll just know it'll be better the next one.
Yeah. I was having a conversation with Brendan a little while ago. We were just talking about just general anxieties and pressures of work and mm-hmm. everything. And he was trying to take a Zen attitude of like, he was just saying, it's like, it's just comics. It's just,
that's like, what I need to get over. You know, he's right.
Even if it's terrible or whatever, it's just a comic book. It doesn't matter. It doesn't define
it doesn't
your life.
Define it doesn't whatever. You. It's like, and what you, like what I realize now is, I can do my absolute best job and then my worst job. And I don't mean a job where I just didn't care. I mean a job where I tried, but it's my worst.
Yeah.
And the reader probably won't see the difference.
Yes.
That's what I have to realize.
Yeah. Also, there's a courage in doing something and failing at it, but doing it anyway.
Yeah.
Rather than like.
And you know what? People are responding. Like I noticed when I would just out a drawing,
yeah.
like a sketchy drawing. Well, we'll wrap it up in a sec.
No. I just got a notification. That's all it was.
There's an energy captured in it.
Yeah.
That people respond to much more than anything that was thought out.
Yeah.
And that's what I want to keep going with.
Yeah. I was reading I can't remember what it was. It was an article about film. It was a filmmaker. It was a review of a movie or mm-hmm. something. And it was talking about how it was like, it was a negative review and saying it was a terrible movie, but it was a terrible movie that could only be made by a great filmmaker trying something and yeah. failing.
And there's merit
and just
in
releasing
that.
It anyway.
And there's
just,
absolute you know, merit
like,
in
yeah.
that.
And it's like, I haven't got to that stage where I feel confident about doing something and going like, yeah, I don't know if this works or not. Who cares? And put it out anyway.
Yeah.
It's like, I want everything that I do that goes out to be excellent.
Right. Right.
And I don't have the balls to just try something experimental
see,
and put it
this
out.
This is not to keep coming back to yoga. But
yeah,
one,
no,
of the
I know.
One of the things that I'm really trying to embrace that yoga is really into is – you stop worrying about getting into that perfect pose.
Yeah.
You just go through the experience of the class.
Yeah.
And then you feel better after it. So it's that Zen idea of it's the journey, not the destination. And I've always been the destination. The final look of this is all that matters. And I rob myself of the joy of that journey. So I'm trying to get back to let me just enjoy the journey and fuck the destination mm-hmm. and see what happens. Mm-hmm. And letting that go. And I'm talking a big game here. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying I'm succeeding at it, mm-hmm. but I've taken steps towards getting there and I plan to continue to do so mm-hmm. to see what happens instead of worrying about that getting there.
Yeah.
Like, and it's life too. Like I've lived this way where it's like, I'm not going to be happy until I have a solid career. We're making a comfortable living and everything's in its place. And that just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying those things don't happen, but you can't live like putting everything on hold until that happens.
Yeah. Are you impatient for, I get impatient for like, I want to make my great book that will be studied in schools. Like now, like I don't, there's some people who they don't do that until they're in 65.
No. Right. I was thinking that way. Like, I've just accepted I'm nowhere near. I don't know if I'll ever do that, but I'm going to stop thinking like I need to do that.
Right.
And I'm just going to do what I can. Like I've just recently kind of like, I remember, I think it was Phil Hester had said once, the most important lesson an artist can learn is their I don't remember the wording. It wasn't shortcomings. Limitations is right. They know their own limitations.
Right.
And I don't say that as a means of downplaying what you're capable of or as a means of holding you back from doing something great, but just accepting that you do have limitations.
Oh, like, sure. Yeah.
Sure, I spend a lot of time looking at someone like Goran Parlov, who I think is maybe the best cartoonist alive.
Mm-hmm.
But I got to stop thinking like I need to get to a level of that kind.
Right.
I would argue that you have done that book a few times that will be studied.
Well, I hope so. I mean, don't know if that's true.
Used as a text in class.
Right. Oh, thanks.
I don't know. I think, not to kiss your ass too much, but I love your work. I think you're a fantastic cartoonist.
Well, I appreciate
it. And one
that.
Of the greats out, definitely.
Oh, well, thank you.
But yeah, it's just trying to, just letting go.
Yeah.
Letting go of putting titles and names and assumptions on things and just letting it happen. Like,
yeah.
I don't know if it's old and I'm not giving up because it's not that I'm not trying. I'm just trying to let it all go.
Yeah.
And just,
I feel like I would have, we were talking about financial security. I feel like I would have a lot more confidence to do that stuff if I had to.
I think about that every day.
Like,
but again, is that what's holding me back from achieving that?
Yeah.
Fear.
It's true.
I've got nothing to lose right now.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not going to do anything terribly irresponsible or we're going to go under completely, but it's not working the way I was going at it.
Yeah.
It's just not. So I need to rethink my whole thought process.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, now it's just let it go, and maybe I'm holding myself back, and maybe just by letting it go and stop letting fear drive me, and stop letting fear drive the decisions about my art and the financial concerns, drive the decisions about the jobs, and what's the worst that's going to happen? I've got to just have that trust in myself, that faith, which for someone who's either agnostic or atheist like myself is a strange concept.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I'm going to have it now. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to do it and see what's what.
That's all you can do.
Now that I've turned this whole thing back on me. sorry.
Is this like Mark Maron?
All right. The narcissist speaks. All right.
You want to call it?
Yeah. I'm starving beyond belief.
Yeah,
now.
I'm actually really hungry too.
Let me just ask you a couple questions. I always end these... and I'm kind of curious here with one question.
Okay.
I find that something that's universal throughout cartoonists or writers or people, creatives, in our industry in particular, is that we all grew up with a combination or one of three genres of music. And I'm curious to see if any of these were part of your past. Punk rock, metal, and hip-hop.
Metal.
Oh really?
Yeah, when I was a kid, I was really into metal. Yeah,
like what?
I was into Metallica and Slayer and Anthrax and yeah, like all that kind of stuff.
Okay, yeah. So I didn't know that about you.
Iron Maiden.
Do you still listen to any of that?
I do. I'm not into I'm not so much into it now as I used to be. Like Becky, for example, you know, super metal.
Right, Becky's the most metal there is.
So I'm not into the current kind of metal scene, but I love that. I love all that old stuff that I used to listen to. I still listen to it. Yeah.
Do you have a favorite album that you listen to more than others still?
I really love. It's a tie, probably a tie between Master Puppets and Injustice for All.
Okay.
Yeah, I all fucking right. love those albums so much. They're so great.
They're so good.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right. Is there anything you wanted to talk about that we didn't talk about?
Not that I can think of offhand.
Do you want to promote anything? It doesn't have to be work, like your sites, your social media stuff.
Just, I guess, the general Twitter and Instagram is Cameron M. Stewart. And then, buy Batgirl and buy Fight Club, too.
All right. Thanks, Kevin.
Thank you.
Terminate its war. Deadly nicotine.